there's a real picture of the gospel and what just happened, Tab. I'm serious. We get do-overs. We do. Thank you very much. That was beautiful. Very beautiful. Another announcement is that on that night of December 8th, when we have the meal, which is a carry-in dinner, we provide the meat, and people have done a great job of bringing in a dish to pass over the years. Sometimes there have been so many here that there are folks sitting upstairs as well, and we like it like that. So please, bring friends to that. Bring friends. So we'll meet the Basque folks, but then what we really want to do that night is take the love of Jesus, the Christmas joy that should be permeating us, and take it into the neighborhood. Bruce blesses so many folks in this neighborhood in ways that you wouldn't know by taking them garden produce throughout the gardening year. And as they're walking by or whatever, they'll mention that. And so, Bruce, we appreciate that. And I've asked him to kind of be our clarion and go ahead and say, hey, how would you like a visit from some carolers on that night? So I could see us in this neighborhood having a south of Jersey and a north of Jersey track and going to some places. But there's more. There's so many of us who love to sing. If your neighborhood, if where you live, you feel like, I'd love to have a group from the Jake come and sing there, we'll do that too. We can send out team after team after team. So wouldn't that be fun? Plan on that and bring folks. Well, some weeks are different than others. Excuse me. First of all, I think I need to apologize to everyone who received my email because I used the word tinkle in it. I first wrote that email for my family, and that was all done, and it was so long and kind of ridiculous, but with the intent of understand that I haven't lost my sense of humor and that it's going to be okay. And then I was all done with that ridiculous thing, and I thought, well, why not just, without rereading it, why not just send that to the church? So, sorry. Sorry about that. I should, not everyone knows what I'm talking about. On Wednesday morning, I awoke at about 5:30, and I just had a cramping in my chest and around my chest, which made breathing very difficult. It was very painful. My hands got ice cold, and this all happened in 30 seconds. And so I thought I was having a heart attack. And Sue took me to the emergency room, and we talk about praying for the different departments at Broman. I'm going to tell you something, friends. I wanted somebody to pray with. When I got there, I'd never been in a situation where I thought I might be having a heart attack. That never happened to me. And to go in there and be cared for as well as I was fabulous. But I wanted somebody to pray with. I thought, there's a church praying for the emergency room. And when I went to cardiac care, we've prayed for both of those places. I thought, there's a church praying, and I'm grateful. But I did learn something else, too, that it's good for me to learn. I've prayed with many of you, for your world, for your situation. Bob came to see me when he got the news, came right in. And he laid his hand on me and prayed for me. And Bob, that was real. I received that prayer with about as open arms as I can receive a prayer. And it mattered. It really mattered. So thanks. Thanks for doing that. I did notice that State Farm's profits went down for a couple hours, but you got back to work, and that was fine. Yeah, maybe. No. And so what did I learn in that? I learned that the prayers of a righteous man availeth much, as we're told, and that this business of prayer, I like to call what we do right where I'm sitting, what we do on Wednesday nights, the hard work of prayer, because we're sometimes talking about joyous things, 10% of the time, 90% of the time, it's a burden. And so here I was burdened, and someone prayed. Not only that, I know many of you were praying, and I received many very, very kind just messages of different sorts. This has happened before in my life where there is a sense of being lifted up. And if you've been through things and that's happened, you know what I'm talking about. Very, very wonderful to know you're not alone and that you're being lifted up. And that if there is a battle being waged in the spiritual realm, you're prevailing because people are lifting you up. And so I thank you very much for that. Now, I should probably say something about what we did learn. It appears, thankfully, that this was not a cardiac event. So that's good. I had been taking a mixture of pain medications. I have a constant back pain that I take medication for, and I'd been having terrible tooth pain. And so I doubled down on my pain medication without consulting anyone except me. So I think that was part of it, but that wasn't the tipping point. I think the tipping point, and I've had to confess this, and I think that I need to be a confessional person. The tipping point, I believe, was more burden than medication. Just a sense of kind of a piling on of a year of a lot of burden and just thinking, well, that's my calling, is to take on burdens. No, it's not. My calling is to cast my cares upon Him because He cares for all of us. And one of you said to me, wouldn't it be a great thing if we could take what we know in the spiritual and just wire it into the physical? Wouldn't that be great? Because what we say we believe, what we cling to, what we want to be real in our lives isn't always an automatic connection. And I really believe I had taken on more in terms of concerns and burden than I could handle. And in fact, the moment this came on me, I was greatly burdened by something. And it was just like it was a tipping point. And lesson learned in that too. I learned something else. I was reminded of something else that I've tried to teach. Now you're going to say, now that was a little bit odd. But in my world, this isn't odd. I would hope that because we're part of this fellowship together, that we would learn that He is in everything in our lives. And I use this Jonathan Edwards phrase, that we want to develop a God-entranced vision of all things. All right? So this very frightening event for me, and undergoing every test you can take for a heart thing, all of this. So I have to say, where was God in all of this? And there are a lot of things. The care was fabulous. But I'm going to tell you about a little something. Okay? A little something. And I don't hesitate to tell you this because I want you to seek God in this way. I want you to know that He is so familiar that He's more than familiar. He's inside. He's there with you. He knows your every thought and need. When we talk about this amazing God, We're talking about a God who knows every one of us completely and everything in the universe completely. That's big. Isaiah is the one who tells us there is no measuring or searching him. There's no searching his understanding. We can't fathom it. But I have experienced it over and over. And I've told you about little things. Now, this is... I want you to think this way, okay? I have my stress tests, and I was saying to Sue, why don't they name it something else? You're supposed to feel good about what you're going to undergo when they say you're going to go take a stress test. Oh, nice. So I took three. Two were radioactive. Stay away. And the other was this treadmill test. Well, John was with me for this treadmill test. And I had so, I mean, he and I, we just talk smack all the time. And I said, I'm going to dominate this test. Never done it before. And you know, we were just trying to be silly. And I didn't dominate the test. Okay. But in the taking of the test, I could tell that my wonderful doctor, Dr. Bill Ray, if you're looking for a doctor, he's a wonderful Christian man. I could tell that when I was taking the test that concern was coming over him. And, oh, boy, I didn't want to see that. I wanted to see you are dominating, not you are being dominated. Okay? So that concerned me, and I said to him when it was, I said, Bill, I can see some concern. And he said, well, there are some things here that do concern me. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that we'll have to look at the, he said, this isn't as definitive as these scans and the chemical test. So that will tell us more. All right, so. But I could tell he was concerned, so therefore I was concerned. And he said, if we see what we might see, then you're gonna be getting a cardiac catheterization. That doesn't sound friendly at all. And so I did not want that. I am a big pansy. Emphasis on big. Emphasis on pansy. All right. So, I do the other test, and he said it'll be 2 or 3 hours before we know anything. Well, John went with me back up to my room, but then he had to leave, so I was by myself. And that is when stewing happens. And so I'm stewing. And I'm thinking, man, this sure throws a wrench in the works. This I don't want, I don't need. But thank you, Lord. If I do need that, I'm here. You know, I got all those things going on. Most of the words had been very encouraging, but there was this possibility. And so, but I just sat there and stewed. I did read some Isaiah and kind of looking for, thou will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusts in thee, saying, you know, meditating on that. And that's very helpful. And when you're in one of those big scan machines, you got to do something. So I'd been meditating on scripture in there and on happy thoughts of wonderful things in my life and so on. But I had the blues at this point, and Sue called to see how I was doing, and she said later, you had the blues. And I said, yeah, I really did. I couldn't not show that, I guess. So I had been there a couple of hours, and if there was anything I was not interested in, it was the outside world. It was sports, it was the news, it was anything. I just didn't, I couldn't take anything but kind of what was going on. Very self-centered at that point. But a little voice said to me, turn on the TV. I hadn't had the TV on, didn't want to have the TV on. A little voice said, turn on the TV. Now, in the Our Pastor is Odd category, this is going to fit, okay? There are a couple of things in my spiritual life that are kind of unusual. One is a certain affinity for creatures. Okay? And those who know me well know that there's a particular creature that I have a special affinity for. Well, another, probably stranger, yes, stranger, is that I have an affinity for a ship, a particular ship. And I have talked about that ship here. Does anybody remember the name of that ship? You haven't been paying attention. It's the Arthur M. Anderson. And it was the ship that was right behind the Edmund Fitzgerald when the Edmund Fitzgerald went down. And it is the ship that Sue and I have amazingly encountered without knowing on our journeys north. And it's a ship that I follow its progress on the Great Lakes from time to time. You can just go on the web and see where it is and what it's carrying and where it's headed and so on. It's 1,000 feet long. It's magnificent. And I'd really like to ride on that ship. So, I certainly wasn't thinking about that ship, but I turned the TV on. Now, what are the possibilities, friends? What are the possibilities of turning the TV on and having the first words that you hear be the Great Lakes freighter Arthur M. Anderson? That happened. And there it was. And it was a story of the Edmund Fitzgerald, because that was in November. But the first thing was this. And I see my brother Mike Connolly back there with a little smile on his face because he gets this, don't you, Mike? You get it. He's a Great Lakes guy, and he's also a connect to these kind of things guy. Yeah, your brother's up there at Sault Ste. Marie, right? He's a captain on a ship, yeah. So the first thing I heard was the Great Lakes freighter Arthur M. Anderson. And I'm going to tell you this. Immediately I stopped thinking about myself. What? Look, and there it was, my ship. And they were inside the ship, and they were talking to people on the ship. And it was, my ship had come in. My ship had come in. And so, I'm not sorry for that. That was pretty good. And so, this is what I thought. The Lord knows. He knows. For you, it wouldn't be that. But it would be something. If you seek me, you will find me. He's already found us. We need to find him. If you seek me with all your heart. So, did I need an encouragement? Okay, let me tell you. My ship comes in, and I'm waiting for Dr. Ray to come in and lower the boom. And my rather sassy nurse Becky, not my Becky, but another one, someone Sue and I have known for a long time, and she is sassy. She comes in and says, well, I suppose you want to go home. I said, more than you know. She says, well, then get. And that, she said, everything's fine. And it was like, wow, cool. Nice 5 minutes here. Really cool. So it appears that it was kind of a perfect storm of medications. I'm on a new diabetes medication that's kind of nobody knows anything about, and these pain medications, and just burden. So feel good, though. I feel fine. I am concerned that on Thursday my mother-in-law is going to withhold gravy from me. She's going to try. She's going to try. I might have to take my own. So, all right. So thanks for praying. Thanks for listening. There are some people here for the first time. They're saying this is a weird place and a weird guy. But, our friends who did their offertory did us a great service and a great blessing because they sang the words of Isaiah 53. I've been pointing towards this part of Isaiah from the beginning of this study, and next week will be our last week in Isaiah, and it's going to point us to Advent. But we always want to start in the New Testament. And so today we're going to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And Scott said it so well, and I didn't prompt him on this, that one of the amazing things about this chapter 53 is it's asking us, it's asking you, and it's asking me questions. And we'll get to those. There's a verse in chapter 1 here that we need to be instructed by. We need to take refuge in this verse. We need to understand that those who believe are different than those who don't believe in certain fundamental ways. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 1, verse 18. For the word of the cross. Friends, we just sang the wonderful cross. Oh, the wonderful cross. When I survey the cross, we come to the cross and we find refuge and hope. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Chapter 53 is about the cross. And as Scott said, it's written 700 and some years before the cross. It's written hundreds of years before there was crucifixion in the world. It's like Psalm 22 describes crucifixion. But when it was written, there was no crucifixion. Now, if you don't believe the Bible is inspired, then I want you to think about, but how can those things be so? And how can the predictions of things to come in place and in time and in person be so absolutely on target as they are in the prophets concerning specifically Jesus? How can they be so right on if they're not inspired? Today's study is about revelation. Revealing. I hear a lot of folks, in fact, I corrected a person in my family this week for saying the book of Revelations. It's not the book of Revelations. It's the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's the revealing of Jesus Christ. Reveal. God revealing himself. That's what happens in the scriptures. That's what explicitly happens in an enormous way in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah is enough, friends. Isaiah is enough. It's enough to understand your life, your predicaments, your hopes. It's enough to understand the world, history, and the future. All these things. The book of Isaiah is full of the theology of creation and creator. It's full of the theology of man. And it's full of Jesus. And today's study is Jesus. Okay? I want us to start not in chapter 53, but in chapter 40. So please turn to Isaiah 40. This is a day where you're going to want to have a Bible out. So there's some Bibles here. If you don't have a Bible out today, you're going to miss out. Chapter 40. Now, one thing that I've learned in this fall season of studying Isaiah is what a masterpiece of literature this is. Because when we come to these Bible books, we don't understand very much their style and structure, and we really don't care, probably. I'm an English major, so I might care some, and I do. But it does help us to understand the depth of the brilliance. And this is a book of such brilliance. Jesus is presented in this book in a lot of ways, but maybe the most identifiable way we can see him is when Isaiah talks about the servant. And there are in these, what we just see as words, there are songs. And there are four songs of servants. Okay? within those songs, in the Hebrew, there's rhyme, there's meter, meaning kind of the flow of it. There's just like we like songs that have verses that rhyme and verses that flow. That's in the Hebrew. These are masterpieces of writing brilliance. Okay? And unless we understand the Hebrew, which I don't know that anybody here really does, we just have to accept that that's part of it. But we are going to see some things. So I want us to look at 40, just verse 1. Well, actually 1 and 2. There's been all this difficulty presented. And then God says this to Isaiah. Comfort. Comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is ended and her iniquity is pardoned, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Remember when we read that a couple weeks ago? Now, isn't it interesting that as we sit here today, there are bombs going off in Israel. And Jerusalem has even had some attacks. So what's this talking about? This is talking about a magnitude of peace and a magnitude of promise that is much more than what goes on in the political or even the moment-to-moment realm. This is talking about a promise of the coming kingdom. All right? Now let's go on from that to 42:1. And here we see the beginning of the servant song. Behold my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. And on and on and on. Behold him. Behold my servant. Now, let's go over to 43, just across the page here. And Brittany and Eric will recognize these verses because they were in their wedding. Verse 1. But now thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. I talked about a very personal God, a God who knew in all the universe that this fearful person needed some hope. And he brought that to me. All right? This verse tells us the same thing. I have called you by name. He knows your name. He knows you much more than that. You are his. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. And when you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. All right, so he introduces us to the servant, and then he says he's our Savior. Let's go on to 52:13, and here's where we're going to get into the crux of chapter 53. Remember this too, friends. This was not written in chapter and verse. All right, this was written over time. This is written segmentally, but not in chapter and verse. So actually what we have here at the end of chapter 52 is going to flow right into chapter 53. So see this with me. 52:13. Again, we have, behold my servant. He shall act wisely. He shall be high and lifted up and shall be exalted. We're going to get into the crucifixion in chapter 53. Well, what a great thing that we get into the post-crucifixion in chapter 52. He shall be high. He was. Remember what Jesus said? If I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. He was put on a cross. But he was resurrected and lifted up. The ascension. That literally happened at the ascension when the risen Christ left this world and the angel says, what are you all staring at? He's coming back. All right? High and lifted up and shall be exalted. Where is he now? He's with the Father. And he is receiving the exaltation of the one who redeemed us and a dying, lost universe. Is this a true story? Let's ask that. Let's go down to chapter 53. Who has believed what they heard from us? Is this true? Who has believed what they heard from us? Nathan, will you give me the first slide, please? As I said, as Scott said, this is about us and what we've believed. And so, I very pointedly ask, have you believed? Next slide. All right, if you say, well, yeah, I guess I believe. The next slide is, what have you believed? Have you believed what they heard from us? This language is very much used in the New Testament too, by people who were familiar with this language. Have you believed our report? Have you believed what we said? We who were witnesses to these things, we who saw these things, do you believe what we're saying? Because we saw these things. We touched him. We heard him. We saw these things. I asked the question a minute ago, can these things be believed? Is this story true? Next slide. All right. Whom have you believed? Well, do I want you to believe me? Yeah, I do. But that's tangential. That's connected to something greater. I want you to believe Jesus. I want you to believe what he says. And I want you to believe what those who didn't believe and came to believe say. Because there wasn't anyone except John the Baptist who was ready for this guy. And I have to say, even his mother was not ready for this. She tried to stop him. His brothers and sisters tried to stop him. There's nobody, even John the Baptist, who didn't need to have belief watered and fed. Because you remember when he was in prison, he sent a message. Are you or are you not? What's going on here? I thought we were getting a new way. So even John, that great one, he wasn't quite sure. So whom have you believed? Now there's another thing. To live in 2012 world, Western civilization, America, media, saturated life, academia, does the story of Jesus lead the way of what we should believe? Or is it viewed as an antiquated, there was a time when people believed that, but no. Whom have you believed? When your professor or your teacher says, you can't trust in that, Who do you believe? Or your friend? Or your relative? Who do you believe? Next slide. Does your belief bring you to the end of yourself? Now, our reading today is intended to bring us to the end of ourselves. It's to help drill down and expose our utter inability to fix ourselves, to save ourselves, to give ourselves hope. All right? Next slide. Does your belief embrace and cling to the substitution of Jesus in your place? Let's read. Keep it right there, Nathan. Who has believed what they heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? I think for most of you, if you have a church Bible, you can look right across the page and look at 51 verse 9, where it says, awake, awake. And that's what I'm saying to us. Wake up. We're in such a slumber of just living life in a pattern and in a rhythm of the doldrums spiritually, that we're not awake. We're not awake to the power of God and the redemption that is here. Okay? Look at this verse. Awake, awake, put on strength. Do you want that? Do you want to be awake and strong? Or do you like hopelessness? Look at this next line. O arm of the Lord. Isaiah is saying, God, you have to act. Put on strength, God. God, act. Because we cannot save ourselves. You know, there's a real difficulty living in the kind of abundance that we live in and the kind of peace that we live in. And yeah, I mean, we can say the economy's bad. Friends, we are so rich. We are so overwhelmed with, do I want to go to Wendy's or do I want to go to Subway? We are so unaware of how bad life is. Can day to day be a struggle. Oh, we have our struggles, yeah. And I'm not saying we don't, I'm saying this. That when these kind of words come to a people who are under the threat of annihilation, they mean something. Oh Lord, arm of the Lord, act. Act on our behalf. And here's what we have to recognize. We are that people. We cannot save ourselves. We cannot fix ourselves. We can't. We are stuck without God acting. Interesting. In this song, how we go from this incredible question of to whom is the arm of the Lord going to be revealed? Revelation. Remember, I said today is about revelation. Who has believed? Have you believed? What do you believe? Whom do you believe? Does your belief put Jesus where you rightly should be in dealing with your every need? There's not one person in here or in the world who has ever lived, except for a couple who were translated into heaven, who doesn't need an answer for what happens to them when they die. Not one. The answer is here. But look how this turns. You know what our faith is about? You're going to go out into a world, into a school, into a workplace, into whatever, into a community, and you are people, if you are that person who believes the cross, who is a Christian, who has said, Jesus, you are my substitute for what I deserve. You took it. And therefore, I love you, and I cling to you, and I receive your grace. If you're that person, then you have believed what has been revealed. You have believed it. And you know this, our faith is about a person. It's not about a systematic theology. We all have a theology. If you don't believe anything, that's a theology. But our faith is in a person, in a historical, verifiable, he did what he said he was going to do person. That's what our faith is in. And look how Isaiah takes us now from all these big ideas, this belief stuff, to a person. For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. Here's the songwriter in Isaiah, plant and root. I like the King James here, shoot and root. Shoot and root. Doot, doot, doot. Right? What did Jesus look like? He wouldn't have been on the cover of GQ, friends. He wouldn't have been. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. The artwork of Malibu Jesus is off. It's not right. He was every man, I think, in how he looked. We're going to see him face to face. And he's going to look so beautiful. But we see him after, don't we? We don't see him when he's growing up and just being the carpenter's son. He was despised and rejected by men. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hid their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Jesus was not someone who, because of any physical attribute, or even because of his countenance, made people want to hang around with him. No, it was because of his love and because of his amazing brilliance that anybody wanted to hang around. But you know, when it came down to it, even his followers didn't esteem him. They left. But notice, it says, we esteemed him not. That's us, friends. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. We look at this itinerant Nazarene, and we don't lift him up like we should. Nope. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his stripes we are healed. That's a little poem, friends. That's if you know anything about the structure of a poem, that's ABBA. That's, here are four ways that Jesus incarnates the forgiveness of God. And because of time, we're going to stop with verse 6. First of all, English class, I want you to notice the first two words of this verse, all we. Now I want you to look at the last two words of this verse, us all. This is poetic device at work. These are bookends. What is in between all we and us all is the meat in the sandwich. Like sheep. Friends, sheep have to have a shepherd. Sheep have to have a shepherd or they just wander. They're not the smartest beasts. We learn that in the scriptures. The Lord is my shepherd. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. My sheep hear my voice. Sheep need a shepherd. We are all sheep. We've gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And remember my question, do you believe, embrace, cling to the substitution of Jesus in your place? That's this verse. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Okay, next slide, Nathan. Read that. Now, I hope we're not just going through motions here week after week. It's not up. Bum, 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 bum. Read it anyway. Is it up? There are things promised in this book of Isaiah that are ridiculously wonderful. They're wonderful beyond your and my ability to soak them in. But I would like to just take every one of you and in a way that guys do with challenging each other, like John and I in the treadmill, I'd say, I'd like you to find better news than the fact that you're going to live another life that will be free of sorrow, free of pain, that you will be all you were meant to be originally. That's going to really happen. Is there better news than that? Or do you like the news that you're just going to get old, you're going to have fake heart attacks, and you're going to die? You like that news? You like the getting old and things hurting? Sue said it to me yesterday. I don't like getting old. I think it every day. But that isn't the end of the story, friends. Isaiah is telling us that because the arm of the Lord has acted, restoration. Redemption. Redemption is an economic transaction where what was wrong or what the debt was paid for. Our debt's been paid. We can't pay it ourselves. I'm not wealthy enough. I couldn't even begin to pay for my own sin. But God did. He laid on him the iniquity of us all. At some point, friends, in our lives, and Jesus tells us this, if we think that in this world alone, we have all there is to have, then we're miserable. Paul says it. He says, we're the most, if this is all there is, then we're the most to be pitied. But this isn't all there is because he says, because Christ rose. He rose from the dead. Okay, final slide. Does this make you thirsty for more? I love how when we put the church together, we said, come thirsty, be refreshed. We're supposed to come here thirsty for God. Thirsty for real, real community. And I challenge you. I challenge you beginning now that you reassert a commitment to this community during the holidays. I know you're busy. But do not neglect the gathering of yourself with God's people during the holidays. When we have things, try to be here. Be a part of it. Help decorate the church. It's joyous. It's wonderful. It will encourage you in faith. Be here for stuff. Get involved. I ask people, hey, would you do offertory live? Boom, doing it. Have others who are raring to go. That's awesome. Do those kind of things. Incarnate the hope. Live the hope. Get to know each other. lift each other up, encourage each other. Next week, we see Jesus himself saying, I am the one that Isaiah is about. And what a great way to end it and to start into Advent. Let us sing.